everyday wellness, what's really most important to know? There is an avalanche of information about health and wellness coming at us all the time. Much of it is confusing and conflicting. One day we hear that we should all be aiming for at least 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise 5 times a week. Then we hear that weights are more important, or that just a few minutes a day of exercise is all we need. We read that soy is a superfood, and then it's an endocrine disruptor, or that it's a good idea to drink more water, but not too much. Add to this information about low-carb diets, gluten, GMOs, superfoods, stress reduction, sleep, and more, and it can all be a little overwhelming. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll try to get simple, beneficial advice about everyday wellness. Maine Calling gets a little bit healthier, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Have you ever resolved to get healthier, but then wondered where to start, or wondered what change would actually make the biggest difference in my life? Well, today we have three experts to help us separate fact from fiction and set some priorities when it comes to healthful living. With me in our studio, Dr. Carrie Gordon. She's a pediatric nephrologist with Maine Medical Partners. She has a sustained interest in nutrition and dynamic mindfulness. Christopher Scott teaches in the Department of Exercise, Health, and Sports Sciences at the University of Southern Maine. And with us in our Bangor studio is Mike Noonan. He has a wellness-based practice based in Old Town, is a diplomate in chiropractic acupuncture, and a columnist for the Bangor Daily News. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
As always, we want to hear from you. What steps do you take to improve your health? What have you always wondered? Here's your chance to ask some experts. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'm really interested in this topic because I feel as though there's so much information about things that in the long run are very small. Lists of, for example, superfoods. You know, what is the trendy superfood of the day everybody's going to buy, but yet they're not doing something else that might help them a great deal more. And a personal story that I'll share is that in most of my 20s and 30s, I had a headache every afternoon. And I always told my doctor, and the doctors where I used to live in Maine would say, oh, you know, that's important to keep an eye on. Fast forward to my mid-30s, I read in a women's magazine that if you get headaches, you might not be drinking enough water. I started drinking more water. My headaches were gone. And it's always made me think, what else is out there like that? What are these simple things we could be doing to change our lives that we don't even realize because we're so focused? We're not focused on the big picture, but we're focused on very small things that are the trendy things. And so I'm going to ask each of you if you could just tell people one thing that you wish they knew, what would it be? And Dr. Gordon, I'll start with you.
Well, this probably isn't surprising information, but if I had to pick one thing, I think I'd say focusing on maximizing the amount of unprocessed food. So looking at how much fiber we're getting and trying to minimize how much sodium we're getting. So I think it's so easy to grab something that's pre-made and heat it up, but I don't think we realize how much healthier it is if we can try to do a little bit more, even if it's simple, cooking for ourselves, making maybe extra portions when we cook a dinner so we can use some of that for lunch the next day. And you know, if we're not getting enough fiber in our diets, you know, it's going to impact us in many ways, including obviously our bowel patterns, which we had talked about a little bit before we even started the program. As a nephrologist, this is something I didn't think I was even really ever going to be dealing with in my career, but it actually leads to a lot of problems with urinary retention, urinary tract infections. So, you know, a lot of fiber, healthy bowels impacts us in more than ways than just constipation.
Right. So fiber is one of those things kind of like water. If you're not getting enough, it can affect you in ways that may not seem directly connected.
Absolutely.
What's interesting to me, though, is that
fiber is not as easy to come by as you might think. If you make yourself a big salad for lunch every day, you might not actually be getting much fiber.
It depends on what you put in the salad. You're right. Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, so because this is something that I spend so much time talking to families about on a regular basis at work, instead of now just saying, oh, there's so many websites, there's lots of websites, I actually, we have a multidisciplinary team who really collected lots of information, great websites with healthy recipes and tricks to finding fiber in ways you didn't even maybe realize. You know, for example, things like chickpeas and beans loaded with fiber. So you throw a handful of chickpeas on that salad and all of a sudden you'll go from having, you know, maybe less fiber if you were had mostly just sort of lettuce and tomatoes. It can give you you know, just a few extra things, throwing some nuts or seeds, those things can make a huge difference.
All right, Mike Noonan, what about you? What would be the one thing that you see people day in, day out that they don't know that you wish they did know?
Well, I'm going to expand a little bit on what Dr. Gordon said. I'm a big believer in minimally processed foods or even unprocessed foods. And I usually advise patients, you know, we're trained to think of we need this nutrient, we need that, and we need this in our diets. If you're eating real foods, and I'm not including sodas and potato chips and things like that, if you're eating real food, the nutrients become a little bit less of a concern. You know, if you're eating, you know, a lot of patients say, well, I have a very healthy breakfast. I have a glass of orange juice. Well, just the processing of orange juice from an orange to squeezing it out to juice, you're greatly increasing your sugar consumption right there at breakfast, sometimes by a factor of 4 or 5. You know, you mentioned fiber. You're greatly reducing your fiber consumption. And then the patient say, well, I have a bagel with cream cheese on it. Well, you know, that bagel typically is a white processed flour. You know, again, you've stripped away the majority of the nutrients. Even if you put the nutrients back in, they're not the same. And the cream cheese is typically a processed, you know, not a really a natural type product. So to me, you know, the idea of the minimally processed foods, like I am absolutely not a fan of low-fat diets. I think that's an absolute mistake. You know, there's nothing more processed than a low-fat food. What are you going to, when you take the fat out, what are you going to put back in? Typically sugar.
It's interesting, though, because I've wondered about this. We have all heard to eat less processed food. And obviously, we know that Cheese Whiz is a processed food. But is a canned black bean a processed food or a Triscuit? You know, obviously, it's been baked or you know, the recipe has been made. It's been baked and packaged in a factory. Does that make it a processed food?
Well, here's the thing. Don't think of it as an either or. Think of it as a process. So, for example, today for breakfast, I had an apple with some peanut butter, okay? That apple was not processed at all. If you were to take that apple, mash it up, cook it into applesauce, well, that's one step of processing. So that's one step away. If you take the apple, squeeze the juice out of it, do what they call the freeze drying, where they take the fluids out and you buy it at the store as a concentrate, you put the fluid back in, there's pretty much no nutrition left in that other than calories. So it's not an either or processing. It's a process. It's different stages.
All right. Well, Chris Scott, I want to bring you into the conversation here. Your expertise is exercise science. And I know you work with a lot of really high level athletes, but you're also really interested in the rest of us and keeping us healthy. And, you know, there's the New York Times is sort of famous a year ago for coming up with that 7-minute exercise. And I think a lot of people are really excited that they don't have to put lots of time into their exercising. Other folks are, I work with a bunch of people who are having standing desks these days because they don't want to spend their day sitting down. I grew up learning that you needed to have a certain amount of cardiovascular exercise every week for your heart to be healthy. What do you tell people? What do you tell people you just meet at a dinner party?
It's all well and good for sure, but I think the biggest thing that I've learned over the years, and, you know, I went all the way with schooling and stuff, and you're taught a very strict regimen that cardiovascular fitness is where we all started. I mean, you look at the field of exercise physiology and go into any laboratory, and there are going to be treadmills and there are going to be bicycles, and you study how the body works with those devices. So naturally, what came out of that is the guidelines for cardiovascular or aerobic activity. And that's all well and good, and they're very strict, and you can follow them if you want. Strength and conditioning, that didn't follow suit until I think more recently. But I think over the years, what I've probably learned the most is that, yeah, exercise is good. But if I were to just say one thing, just be physically active. You don't have to put a structured program into place in order to gain health benefits through physical movement. Walking your dog on a regular basis, which is what I do twice a day. I make sure I go miles when I do that. That's something that I think is going to be good for me. If you're watching your kids at a playground, for example, why don't you take part in playing with them? I'm actually physically moving along with them. That's something that's going to probably give you some health benefits as well. So being physically active on a regular basis, regardless of what you choose, I think that's something that you should probably take away.
All right. Well, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to throw a few things out there that I think are in the news a lot. Why don't we start with the idea of sleep? How much sleep do we need? How do we determine how much sleep do we need? Do any of the three of you study this, have thoughts for your patients?
Yeah, this is Dr. Noonan here. I work with sleep patients with sleep issues a lot, and there's no set amount. Some people do better with the range I was taught was between 6.5 and 8 hours a night, but there's no set number that's right for everybody. One of the biggest issues with sleep disruption for a lot of my patients is eating too many carbs, because if you're on that carboholic sugar roller coaster, your blood sugar is going to tend to crash around 4 a.m. and you're going to find yourself waking up. So I, you know, with patients with that issue, I often recommend, you know, if you find yourself waking up at 4 a.m. and you don't feel well, avoid carbs before breakfast, before bed. Definitely go with a heavier protein snack.
Carrie?
Yeah, sleep is so important, and it's a topic that comes up a lot. I do nephrology. I also work in the Countdown, the obesity program we have at Maine Med for Kids, and you know, high quality sleep is such an important part of just being healthy and well during the day. If you don't sleep well, you're not going to have the energy to get the activity you need. You're not going to make probably as healthy choices with the meals. And, you know, in the young population we deal with, one of the biggest concerns is the electronics around sleep. So having studies can even show that even if you're not using your iPhone or your electronics, having them in the room can affect your quality of sleep. And there's lots of healthy routines you can really develop around sleep if you're someone who's having sleeping difficulty. You know, there's, for example, yoga postures that really probably help you, you know, calm your body down. Healthy routines to get you to sleep is really, really important. And I agree, we don't really have it's not always clear what the set amount is. Probably if you're someone who needs too much sleep, meaning, gosh, seem to need more than 12 hours. If you're someone who sleeps 4 hours, those extremes probably aren't good. But I agree, if you're feeling well-rested and you're in the 6 to 8 hour range, you're probably doing okay.
Chris Scott, as you know, there's a big craze of wearable devices, wearable fitness devices, and the 10,000 steps a day seems to be what goes with people who buy these garments or Fitbits. What do you think of that advice?
I think it's okay, but it falls along the guidelines of exercise, though. I think at the fundamental level, you're talking about imposing cardiovascular routine on somebody. It was interesting. A colleague came in my office the other day, and they were talking about going on a run with somebody else, and each one of them had a Fitbit, and one of them had something else, and they all had both of them had heart rate monitors on, and they were checking themselves at specific intervals what their numbers were, and what they found that each device was different every time that they checked it. So it serves as a good guideline, and if you're into clocking those things and making careful computations of all this stuff, I think it's fine, but again, it's as far as if people need a guideline to follow, 10,000 steps, and they're looking at a pedometer, it's a buzzer, it's a whistle, it's a bell, it's something that people might enjoy following. Again, I like to stress, if you're not an exercise person, is just regular physical activity on a regular basis is just as good as being hardcore over the top with exercise.
If you're somebody who perhaps has a disability, maybe you're in a wheelchair or have trouble walking a great distance, Would just doing something in your chair with your upper body be beneficial? And if so, what would you recommend?
Absolutely. Just getting around in a wheelchair it can be a very difficult thing. And just by performing the act of wheeling around, all you have is your upper body. Absolutely. You should recommend that. You should use that and recommend that as something that's, it's certainly helpful. There's no doubt about it. It is healthy rather than just sitting and doing nothing.
Okay. Before we go to a break, Mike, I want to turn to you a little bit. I know that your practice is a wellness-based practice, and you wish that the whole medical system looked at medical care differently. Can you explain your philosophy?
Sure. Our current system is disease-focused. You know, we take medications to control disease. We do screenings, you know, looking for different diseases. There's diets that are recommended for disease. But what we see is a lot of patients basically sacrificing their health in order to prevent or control a disease. For example, you know, the whole aspirin a day theory. Actually, the FDA came out against that recently because taking a drug like that, it interferes with your health. You know, there's no drug that's actually good for you. And our perspective is, let's not compromise our health to prevent a disease. The vast majority of diseases that we suffer from are lifestyle. So if you live a wellness lifestyle, most of these won't be a problem anyway. And then if they do become a problem, they can be treated better with wellness type treatments as opposed to going with a med. We're at the point now that almost 60% of the adult population over 20 is on a prescription medication. And almost 15% are on 5 or more. A lot of the patients that I work with, we can wean them off these meds very successfully by just, you know, again, improving their lifestyle and wellness-based treatments, either chiropractic adjustments, acupuncture, you know, whatever that patient needs.
Okay. Well, Dr. Gordon, I want to ask you about this notion of wellness-based care in just a minute, but we do have to take a break. So we'll have that conversation to get to your comments and questions. Stay with us.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. On-air membership campaigns can go on for days and days and days. Maine Public Radio is working to change that with the One Day Super Thursday campaign. There's one coming up, and we have some very important goals to reach. So in order to make sure we reach them, we're counting any calls or online pledges received between right now and the end of Super Thursday. You can call 800-866-1475 now or anytime, or pledge online at mpbn.net. Support Maine Public Radio and help keep the pledge drive short. Thank you.
And that's the Super Thursday this Thursday, February 11th. Are you interested in what's taking place in New Hampshire today and what it means? Well, Maine Public Radio is the place to be this evening as we learn about what transpires next door in the Granite State with their first-in-the-nation primary. Our political coverage starts at 7 this evening with our special coverage coming from our friends at New Hampshire Public Radio. We expect the story to unfold all the way to about midnight. In addition, Maine Public Television will sum things up at 11 with a special report from the PBS NewsHour team. Political coverage on both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television this evening at 7 on radio and 11 on TV.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, tips for leading a healthier life. With me in our studio, Christopher Scott teaches in the Department of Exercise, Health, and Sports Sciences at USM. Dr. Carrie Gordon is a pediatric nephrologist with Maine Medical Partners. And with us in our Bangor studio, Mike Noonan. He's a chiropractor and columnist for the Bangor Daily News. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dr. Gordon, before we went to a break, we were talking about the notion of wellness-based care. I could tell you wanted to jump in, but we had to go to a break.
Yeah, thank you. I don't disagree with what Mike said about oftentimes medications are prescribed when lifestyle changes would really be the more effective route. One example for that, for example, we were talking earlier about using high fiber to treat something like constipation as opposed to maybe taking the time to talk about diet. I think, though, you have to keep in mind is I think there's a really important role for both, because usually when we're treating significant constipation, for example, we can't just say do the fiber. You usually need medications to sort of soften things, get things going, and then make those dietary changes. And it's also important to realize that lifestyle changes, not everybody's able to make lifestyle changes. Lifestyle changes, the less healthy things that we're doing in our lives, we're usually doing them for a reason. We're maybe eating unhealthy food because we're feeling sad and it makes us feel better, or dealing with the stress of our day. And so being able to find alternatives for those things and being able to make healthy choices, it doesn't always happen overnight. And in the meantime, we need to be able to keep our bodies safe.
All right. And Chris Scott, your thoughts on wellness-based medicine?
I think it's important that, or interesting rather, that the American College of Sports Medicine, which is all things sports medicine, they actually view exercise as a medicine. And they treat it that way in terms of intensity and duration and so on and so forth, because too much can actually hurt you. And not enough is not enough. But it is interesting that you can view it from a pharmacological standpoint, if you will.
And it's so interesting because an email just came in from Hannah. She says, diet and exercise are known to be beneficial for many ailments, from depression to type 2 diabetes. No doctor has ever included exercise as part of a treatment program for me. It's not uncommon to be treated by doctors and nurses who don't set a good example for fitness and body mass index. What are the expectations within the broader medical community for healthcare professionals and obesity? Carrie, since you're nodding over there, I'm going to send this one to you.
Yeah, well, I actually just came back from a conference a few months ago in Boston talking about this is a very important issue, right? Because we know that healthcare providers who are themselves leading healthy lifestyles are much more apt to be comfortable and effective at talking to patients and families about these changes. But we in healthcare also have stress in our lives. We also, it's not always part of our healthcare training to fit these types of things in. I, for example, I'm a pediatric nephrologist. I'm one of three people. Most of my career, I've been one of two people. So half my nights, half my weekends, I'm on call, available for emergencies. Fitting those things in is something I work really hard to do. And there are times in my life where I'm less effective at it than I'd like to be. And I agree with the caller. I mean, it's the right thing for us, and it's important, and it's something we need to continue to strive as a medical community to work on.
Going to the calls, we're going to go to Sonia, who's calling from Portland. Hi, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I just want to say, listen, we know one thing here. The most important component to wellness is stress management and being aware of how stress impacts our mental health, our behavioral health, and also our immune system, which is part of a larger part of wellness. I am fascinated with the latest research by Dr. Gabor Maté in regards to treatment of addiction and chronic mental health conditions, and also trauma-informed yoga and connecting people to their bodies, which is a critical component to any kind of wellness plan. Thank you.
Well, Mike Noonan, both Carrie and Chris are in this studio nodding. I suspect you are as well.
Yes, I am. And, stress, of course, that word means a lot of different things. I often work with my patients. It's a little bit different, as a chiropractor, I'll see a patient regularly over a period of time. And it gives me a chance to kind of catch up with a patient or you can tell when something's going on with a patient. And, it'll give them a chance to open up because you develop a bit of a relationship. And I've recommended counseling, and we have a CD that the patients can buy. That's like a relaxation, progressive relaxation, and that really is very important. The other thing that I found really effective for stress control is acupuncture. I've have so many patients where, when they really look forward to it, believe it or not, having their body perforated with a bunch of little needles, but they find it very relaxing. And that's one of my main go-to treatments for that.
All right. Well, thanks, Sonia, for your call. We're going to move on to John. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. This is interesting because I have Parkinson's disease. And when I started to exercise, my physician told me not to do it because I'm not being monitored. And it would be worse to do it than it is to have the Parkinson's. and yet it's better to do what I'm doing and do the Pilates that I'm doing psychologically and physically. So why is there such a roadblock put up to somebody that has a condition that wants to do something?
Is it, do you think, Chris, this is that there just isn't the research on some of the diseases and the relationship to exercise?
No, I think there's a lot of research out there. This sounds like somebody who might be just separating themselves from a different type of care, being the doctor of this person. What you need to do is you need to find somebody who is a specialist in exercise that can actually treat disorders. You have Parkinson's disease, so you should be able to find somebody out there who has a specialty, not only in exercise prescription, but in Parkinson's disease as well. This is something that it's called Exercise for Special Populations. It's a course that I teach, and there are definitely many different programs out there that can be beneficial to someone with your disorder.
Even here in Maine?
Even here in Maine, absolutely. That's what these people are trained for. You know, people ask me what an exercise physiologist is, and as opposed to the health fitness. And I see a health fitness as someone who, a specialist, as someone who's trying to change behavior. Somebody doesn't exercise. You want to try to make them exercise regularly. That's a behavioral change. That's very, very difficult for somebody to do. And you also don't want them to get hurt when they're doing exercise. So you also need somebody who knows what they're doing. An exercise physiologist is someone who looks at – I call myself a physiologist, and I use exercise as a model to study how the body works. So all the academia behind this, you know, has a well-rehearsed meaning, and that's to improve body functions and not to hurt anyone along the lines. I'll just add this as a joke. I can remember when my grandfather was still alive and I was getting my master's degree in fitness management or something along these lines, and he said, I just don't understand why you need to go to school so long to teach aerobic dance. And I was like, Grandpa, you just don't understand.
So would you recommend that John just Google exercise for special populations and Parkinson's disease,
yep,
in Maine and see what pops up?
There are many good gyms in the area, and there are a lot of people out there from USM who absolutely understand this condition and know how to treat it through exercise.
Great. Well, there you go, John. Good luck to you. We're going to move on to South Berwick and Melanie. Hi, Melanie. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
Just curious your panelists' thoughts on if they place any value into nutritional cleansing and detox programs that I always see on Facebook, like Shakeology or Isagenics or any of those.
Melanie, I'm so glad you called because I think that everyone out there has had somebody in their workplace or neighborhood do some sort of detox program and swear by it. And Dr. Gordon, you are grimacing.
Well, so I think anything – so the benefit of doing something like that, like a detox, I think it's your way of saying I'm going to make a change. I'm going to start today. I'm going to, you know, break free from my habits and try something new and different. And I think that piece of it is probably the biggest benefit. I think the thing we have to be careful about is, you know, fad things that we're not going to be able to continue because, so Shakeology, you know, that is processed, right? So I know people who use Shakeology actually, and I, you know, I don't know all the ingredients in it exactly, but I know it's supposed to be a relatively healthful processed food in terms of it's supposed to have fiber and, real ingredients mixed into it. But, you know, I'm more of an advocate of if I'm going to make a breakfast shake for myself, a smoothie instead of eating breakfast, I'd rather make it for myself. So I think, you know, if you're going to commit to buying Shakeology every morning and you're eating that instead of going to get a donut, I don't think anybody would argue probably the Shakeology is better. I don't know that same thing with a cleanse. If you're going to do a cleanse because you're going to sort of break free of old habits, that's fine. But that's obviously not a long-term plan if you're just going to go back to other habits before you did the cleanse that were really less healthy.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Melanie. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566 going to Kate, who's calling from Belfast. Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering if your panelists are familiar with Juice Plus and if they believe it offers any benefits beyond what you'd get from just taking a daily multivitamin.
Mike Noonan, and I actually would love to have a conversation, too, not only about Juice Plus, but the whole idea of multivitamins. Go ahead.
It goes back to, first of all, I'm not familiar with that particular brand, no. But it goes back to what we talked about earlier. In terms of the processing, you know, we've talked about the processed foods. Most people take vitamins because they think, well, my foods are processed. The vitamins may be processed out. There's nothing that we eat that's more refined than the vitamins that you buy at the store. They're very highly processed. Some of them aren't even from food sources. So I don't, and I'm not saying there's zero benefit to them, but I don't use those, you know, those types of vitamins at all because, again, they're very, when you take a vitamin C supplement, it's just one molecule. It's ascorbic acid. Well, the chemist who shared the Nobel Prize for winning it for isolating ascorbic acid wrote a letter saying, don't use it. It's too refined. It's very unnatural. So that whole classification of, you know, I had a patient bring a multivitamin once and one of the B vitamins that had like 3,000% of your daily requirement. Well, that's just completely unnatural. I don't go for any of those. To me, that's not wellness-based. Let's put it that way.
And Chris Scott, we hear a lot, we see a lot of supplements out there for whether you're a bodybuilder or you want to gain speed. And what is your thoughts as an exercise physiologist on supplements to improve your performance?
Well, it's a big industry, isn't it? That might be the biggest part of the whole thing. I totally agree with Mike. If you're eating correctly, you don't probably need to have supplements. And if you look at how they're made, they're so extremely processed that I'm not under the impression that they really are healthful in a way that most people would think. They might be low in calories, they might be high in vitamins and minerals, and so on and so forth. But again, it's as a protein shake or something that you just would buy at a store. You can't get any more processed than that. There's not a whole lot in terms of supplements that are out there that actually have proof behind them as well. I'm only aware of two things that are going to have a major impact on athletic performance. One is carbohydrate loading. If you're a distance runner, which is really not a supplement in any way, it's just carbohydrates.
And if you're a distance runner.
Yeah, and if you're a distance runner.
Not if you're going to go play tennis with your friends.
No, I mean, if you're going to, right. Carb loading because I'm going to go play tennis is not the way to do things. It's amazing how many people sit down and have a big plate of spaghetti just because they're going to play tennis that afternoon. You know, that's the way they justify it. The other supplement is if you're a weightlifter, creatine monohydrate. That stuff actually works a little bit. But there's just so much out there I have people, friends that are colleagues that are in the field, and I understand what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish, but there's just not a whole lot out there that is really scientifically based, quote unquote, to actually show that it's meaningful. And then you've got the whole psychological component behind it, where someone takes something and they think it helped, and then by word of mouth, suddenly that's going to be catch on and be the new big thing. I don't think there's really a whole lot out there to supplement. You need to eat right. Start off by doing something along those lines.
Okay, so before we go to a break, I've got to ask you guys about this. I read that article about Tom Brady and how he eats that was in the Boston Globe a couple weeks ago. And one of the things he said is he doesn't eat nightshades like eggplant and tomatoes. Have you all heard about this? And is there any truth to avoiding this kind of thing? I love eggplant and tomatoes.
Yeah, this is Mike Noonan here. And I think that's one of those situations where there's some truth to it for some people. That's a recommendation I've made to patients before. If they have a lot of arthritis, a lot of inflammation, and they're just not responding to the usual treatments, you know, there are some people that do respond to, you know, that do react to those kind of foods.
All right. Well, we got to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Please stay with us.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Sillies and Sillies with a Twist in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Wednesday through Friday, 9 on the weekends, with vegan and gluten-free options, sillies.com. And Casella, committed to boosting recycling rates statewide through its One Bin, Zero Sort program, Casella. Giving resources new life.
Nobody does the New Hampshire primary like New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Laura Kanoy.
And I'm political junkie Ken Rudin. Join us on primary night as we chart returns and reactions.
Our reporters will be at campaign headquarters all over the state.
And experts on the First of the Nation primary will be in the studio with us all night long.
Go to The Source for complete coverage of New Hampshire's presidential primary from NHPR.
And you'll be able to tune into that here on MPBN beginning at 7 o'clock this evening.
This is Howard Berkus from NPR News. Maine was the setting for one of my most memorable stories. Chabig Island sought and won its independence, and self-described lobsterman Mabel Dowdy explained the significance.
This is ours now. I think before that, we felt that those people on the mainland owned the island. We're going to be our own people.
Maine is a special place, and you're reminded of that every day on Maine Public Radio. Take advantage of the Super Thursday one-day membership campaign, another Maine original, by calling 800-866-1475 or go to mpbn.net.
And Super Thursday is coming up this Thursday, February 11th.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on Maine Calling Everyday Wellness. With me in our Portland studio, Dr. Carrie Gordon, a pediatric nephrologist with Maine Medical Partners. She has a sustained interest in nutrition and dynamic mindfulness. Christopher Scott teaches in the Department of Exercise, Health, and Sports Sciences at the University of Southern Maine. And with us in our Bangor studios, Mike Noonan. He's a chiropractor in Old Town and a columnist for the Bangor Daily News. He has a wellness-based practice. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Dave, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm reading more studies about the mind-body connection, and I'm interested to hear your panelists' view on the role and benefits of meditation.
Dr. Gordon.
Well, you know, obviously this isn't something I studied in medical school, but personally I'm very interested in yoga and meditation. It's something that there's a lot of anxiety in my family, and meditation is something that I think it's really powerful. I've been participating in some of the local yoga and meditation classes that they offer at Greener Postures. It's a yin class. I love it. You know, I leave there feeling like I took a sedative, honestly, and it's amazing how powerful I think these techniques are. And I'm excited that, you know, there are hospitals across the country that are starting to connect more with the sort of wellness community around yoga and meditation, and I'm hopeful that in the future we can do some more of that work at MayMed.
All right, thanks for your call, Dave. We're going to go to Freiburg and Bobby. Hi, Bobby. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a registered nurse and a certified personal trainer that I have a business over here, and I also teach seniors. And I guess my comment, and it's nice to hear these experts talk about their own wellness, because many times that's what I see, is that the medical practitioners are not following their own advice or setting a good example. And, you know, they're overworked, they're stressed out, and a lot of ours certainly are athletic and out there, but many times they're not. So, and as a registered nurse, I just want to say that it's been a terrific crossover for me, and I see it in the future more, that wellness-based, you know, using that medical connection to promote wellness from the get-go.
Thanks for your call, Bobby. Carrie, we think about, doctors think about wellness and prescribing things differently than they used to, don't they?
I think they do. Yeah, I think it is tough that really, you know, through medical school, you know, our training really is helping us. You know, we learn more about taking care of diseases sometimes than preventing health problems. But I think, you know, even back when I went through med school, there was really a push for more primary care training, which really primary care really does typically try to focus more on keeping you healthy and wellness. And I think there's a huge role probably in the future for looking at how we can maybe combine some of the other areas in life that keep us well with our health care. Wouldn't it be great if we could go in to see our primary care doctor and there was a place to get a massage in that same building, or there was a yoga facility in that building, or a place where you could learn meditation right there? And I don't think that's far-fetched. I really think that's where medicine is headed.
All right. Bobby, thanks so much for your call. Before we go to another call, though, I want to ask Chris Scott something about this whole idea of high-intensity training and where we are in our thinking about that, boot camp classes and, you know, wind sprints, things like that.
It's not a new trend, believe it or not. I actually went to a talk once, and it was a cardiovascular physiologist who said this is the fourth wave of high-intensity interval training we've seen in this country. It started off, I guess, in the 1930s with a couple of German doctors who were training people for the Olympics. So this is the fourth time we've seen this, and it's certainly caught on. It's certainly trendy. And what we're starting to recognize now is that we've, you know, exercise science has sort of evolved on from the aerobic, the long-distance running and bicycling and cross-country skiing. And we're recognizing that, wow, you're pretty limited. If you're pretty limited with exercise duration, if it's really high intense, it actually has quite a physiological benefit and a health benefit as well. So I've seen studies that as little as 6-second all-out sprints on a bicycle with 30 seconds rest. Repeat that 10 times. You haven't even done 2 minutes of exercise, and yet the health benefits and the physiological changes that take place or it can be rather staggering.
Really, what can happen? So I like this idea, jumping on an exercise bike and going hard for 6 seconds.
Well, and some people do and some people don't, though. You know, some people will avoid that. But apparently, in terms of health benefits, I think it affects glucose and insulin levels quite dramatically. And then one of the things we've discovered in our work at USM is when you're doing really high-intensity stuff, you're primarily burning glycogen glucose, stored glucose, and that helps your blood glucose levels and your insulin levels. But it's the recovery time that's really where you're probably burning the most fat. And if you think about it, if you do a 6-second sprint and you recover for 30 seconds, the vast majority of that time period now is recovery, not exercise. So I've been writing a lot of papers on now. We need to think about when we design exercise programs, not just the exercise, but the recovery as well. And if you have a high-intensity type of an activity, you're doing it regularly, and you've coupled that with intermittent recovery periods, that probably results in the largest body composition changes in terms of lowering your body fat as well. So the evidence is becoming more and more clear, more and more abundant, literally every single week, that it really does work. But whether it's for everyone, that's another question.
Well, it's interesting because so many people are pressed for time and so many people are also challenged by, we've talked about this on the program before, maybe not having a great place to exercise. If you live on a rural road and you want to walk the dog, you might be putting your life in your hands. But maybe just by grabbing a jump rope and going out in the driveway for a few minutes and doing it hard, you're going to get a great benefit.
Absolutely. And if you go to a good trainer and just learn a few things, it's amazing how things are different now. I mean, I go back to when I started exercising and it was all about jogging and or lifting weights. And nowadays, something along the lines of you go into a fitness facility, they'll hand you a sledgehammer and they'll give you a 300-pound tire and tell you to whack it a couple of times. And it's just the creativity and the imagination that these fitness people have actually come up with. And it's all well and good. And if that motivates you, hey, you've won probably more than half the battle for most people. On the other hand, I've also read papers that, oh, this high-intensity stuff, that actually drives people away. So it's very individualistic in terms of what you want to choose, but there sure is a whole lot out there.
But moving your body is better than sitting in your chair.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to go to Paul. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much. That's an interesting segue on energy bursts, connecting with my question, which occurred when I went to the fridge one morning for breakfast and I found a bowl of probably 16 ounces of cooked beets. And having those cooked beets gave me an energy burst better than a cup of caffeine. I would love it if you would tell us a little bit about beets juice. And I know some athletes have worked beet juice to a toxic level. I've a little bit about that. But
okay, Paul, I'll ask Mike Noonan. Mike Noonan, do you think of beets as a superfood?
It's kind of the same answer as before. If you're eating let's say a steamed beet, there's a lot of nutritional value there. If you're juicing the beet, you know, you've changed the composition of that, the nutritional balance of that tremendously. And will you get a boost from it? Absolutely, because it's you're hugely increasing your sugar consumption. So is that a good thing? Not necessarily. So, you know, it isn't to me, yes, absolutely, beets are a very healthy food. That isn't the question. The question is, what did you do with the beet? You know, if you ate it just as it is, that's a very different food from juicing or, you know, some of the other processing that happens.
Could Paul's energy boost be from the sugar in the beets?
I bet it was, yeah.
Yep. I bet it was,
yes.
Yep.
So you kind of ate a healthy candy bar.
Exactly.
Okay, Paul, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Rossi calling from Portland. Hi, Rossi, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks very much for taking my call. My comment slash I'd like to get your opinion on is I'm really into doing saunas and pretty regularly, and I think it's an element of wellness that kind of goes under the radar, especially in the winter and around here. And just like to get your guys' input on saunas, regular saunaing and getting and sweating that way as a sort of more authentic type of detox.
Chris Scott, I'll let you take this one.
I don't know the science behind it, but I have an interesting story. I went to a conference in Finland once, and that has got to be the world's authority on sauna. And I remember that when they're in their top physiology journals, they had every year they have a journal that's dedicated specifically to the health benefits of a sauna, and they swear by it. So I haven't studied the physiology behind it, but again, if it's one of those things where you really find enjoyment out of it and it's not hurting you, why not?
Well, there you go, Rossi. Thanks for your call. We have an email. Hello, I'm a 75-year-old woman with osteoporosis. My doctor said I should get 1,500 milligrams of calcium per day. I get 500 from supplements and 1,000 from lactose-free milk. I'm lactose intolerant. I learned that foods high in oxalates like spinach, rhubarb, wheat bran, black and other dried beans, carrots, sesame seeds, chocolate, and many others limit the body's ability to absorb calcium. My diet's already limited because of severe heartburn. I'm on prednisone and Nexium. I'm wondering whether I am absorbing calcium at my age and what effect eating the high oxalate foods might be. Carrie, I see you nodding your head. This is something you're familiar with.
Sure. You know, and I'm sure your doctor's recommendations, assuming that you're not going to absorb every drop of that calcium that you're eating. But it's true if you're having trouble getting enough calcium in, you know, having some of the, you know, if what did she say she was taking?
500 from supplements and 1,000 from lactose-free milk.
Yeah. So, you know, if she's getting the lactose-free milk, you know, drinking that without maybe having a lot else at the same time might be helpful than as opposed to having it with a meal where she may be competing with other things for absorption. That would be one suggestion. That's definitely true.
All right. We're going to go to Jack, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if one of the doctors could comment on whether or not gluten-free foods are good for everyone or just those with gluten allergies.
Okay, well, you have hit a big thing in our conversation, our national conversation about food right now. Mike, I'll let you start with this. What is your thinking about the gluten-free trend?
It's a complex issue. Going gluten-free probably saved my life. I had severe sleep apnea. I used a CPAP machine for a while. That helped some. I had the surgery on my nose. That helped some. What really did it was getting off gluten. It was causing a lot of congestion. I've read a few articles that suggest that it may be, and let me go back a step. I've had a number of patients where I've suggested they go gluten-free, and it's made huge health benefits, joint and muscle pain, heartburn, even depression. Now, I have read there's some nutritionists that suggest that What farmers have started doing is they've started to make the harvesting of the wheat easier. They kill it first with Roundup, like 2 or 3 days before they harvest it. So there may be some residual pesticide. But what I know is that's one of the first dietary recommendations I make. However, it doesn't, you know, if you're eating a bunch of gluten-free and you're still eating all kinds of grains, which are very high in carbs, that part of your health isn't going to improve. So I had one patient who, you know, prior to coming to me, she had gone gluten-free and didn't lose any weight. There was really little change. She was still eating all the breads and pastries and pastas. They were just gluten-free. Well, if she's not that sensitive to gluten, that's not that big of an improvement for her.
All right. Dr. Gordon, is this something you've been following as well?
Well, you know, I actually, one of my quirky habits at home is I have a flour mill, so I mill my own flour, and so I have a lot of opinions about gluten. First of all, celiac is a real disease, and so obviously, and there are people who have specifically have gluten intolerance, so those people should avoid it. But I think the bigger problem with gluten in the general population is that most of our gluten we get with our processed foods, which is white flour, basically all the healthy part of the flour is removed. If you have a whole grain, fresh milled flour, I'm not convinced that gluten is the enemy that everybody thinks it is.
All right. Well, this was so interesting. We could talk for a couple hours, but we are out of time. Thank you all for joining us today. Dr. Carrie Gordon, a pediatric nephrologist with Maine Medical Partners. Christopher Scott teaches in the Department of Exercise, Health, and Sports Sciences at the University of Southern Maine. And Mike Noonan is a chiropractor in Old Town, a diplomate in chiropractic acupuncture, and a columnist for the Bangor Daily News. John Geimel ran the board today. Jonathan Woodward answered your calls. We had additional help from Rich Tozier in our Bangor studio. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, a recap of tomorrow's New Hampshire primary vote. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.